1982. 18-year-old James Quentin Stevens opened fire into the hallway of Virginia's Lake Braddock Secondary School. He would hold 10 people hostage for 21 hours. And despite his reasons for doing so, his rage, miraculously, no one ended up being harmed in that. Stevens has revealed his entire story in the book Once a Shooter, Redemption of a High School Gunman, and he is our author of the week today, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone, just south of Kearney. I want to thank you for being with us this morning. Quite a, well, different author of the week, if I were going to identify it. I start with, why did you write the book? But before I get into that, just if you would lay out that day for us, what happened exactly back in 1982?
Hey, Nick, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. So I can't speak for all shooters, but I can speak for what happened to me. And that would be the day it happened. I was already dead. And I know I don't expect a lot of your listeners to understand that. But my heart was beating, my brain was functional, but I had conceded to death the night before in an attempted suicide. So during that time, I found myself at a point of crossing over to death, and in my cowardice conversation with the dark side within me, had this conversation with this inner voice. And some people might not agree with that, but I did, and came up with a death plan to go and create as much happiness as I could, the end result still being death. But during that time, came out of the school alive. No one was hurt, physically hurt. And that was almost 40 years ago. And the reason why now, why are you coming out with this story? I would say I'm so tired of seeing kids being victimized, not only the victims in the schools, but the shooters themselves. And my goal with this book is to identify all the causes that come up to this point where a child gets to this point, because it takes years of pain to get to a point to become this coward. And again, we have to be accountable for our choices. We can't blame it on our domestic abuse. We can't blame it on all the things that happened to us. But in my case, I should be dead. And I know this. That's why I thank the Lord every day for my life. But now I want to use it for His good.
Right.
And I have, for the past 20 plus years, I've been helping support police. I help support military. I've been all over the country and worked with different organizations and benefiting children, Christian schools, and it's endless of what God has allowed me to do. So that's my goal now.
We're talking with our author of the week, TJ Stevens. The book is Once a Shooter, Redemption of a High School Gunman. Obviously, I mean, as you mentioned, you were, when you made this decision, you were in a very dark place. I mean, was this a lot of outside influence? What was going on in your life at that particular time when you made that decision that you were going to go into a school as a gunman?
Well, I'd just come out of an abusive relationship with a stepfather that was out of my control. It started when I was about 7 and ended around 16, I would say. And so there's this, people think you get up one morning and you decide to do something like this. No, it's just a culmination of pain throughout the years. And if you don't know how to deal with it, if you don't have a mentor, I needed somebody to really set me in my place and wake me up and just love on me with some tough love, right? I needed some serious discipline in my life. And I didn't have that structure. Am I blaming that? No. But I'm just saying the red flags of what I did not have, and I wish I did. So the day of the event, that tipping point was a relationship with a girlfriend, and I was just done with myself anyway. I mean, I just hated who I was. I didn't want to even want to, you know, I was going to do a world a favor and take my life out the night before. And in my cowardice rebellion, because I was not a nice person at this point, I had a lot of anger and things like that. So
And it sounds, the way I understand this, that the ultimate end result for you was your own death, and you decide to go into the school. Did you, your mind, think, well, I know that in order to get to the point of death, I'm going to have to kill others? Or was that in between, sort of up in the air? You didn't know how it was going to go. You just knew what you wanted.
Yeah. It's not really what I wanted. It was just the result of reality for me at that time, because I had no hope. There was no hope in my life. There was no direction. I didn't have anybody, or doesn't have to be a body. I didn't have that, that direction in my life to, and I found later on in life that, you know, helping others is part of the healing process for me. And, I believe more so now than ever in a higher power, and that's God Almighty. And, you know, a lot of people roll their eyes when they hear that, but I'm going to tell you something. I was a high school shooter. I was dead. I should be dead and or in prison, one of the two. And I have two children, five grandchildren, two companies, and I'm serving the Lord in many ways to help others, to reach out to the community and make a difference. And so what does that, how do you get from point A to Z? And that's God Almighty and Christ and how he lives within us. If we accept that and turn to him and give people hope and fill that void in these kids' lives and stop ignoring the red flags, if you will, something made this kid, right?
Yeah. You know, I want to ask, how long do we have with you? I know that generally, and when the publisher, I usually say around 10, 15 minutes or so. Do we have a little leeway on that, or how long do we have you this morning?
As long as you want me.
All right. Yeah. Well, I'm good.
I got another interview in about 30 minutes.
Okay. Wait, all right. Good. Well, then I'm going to, if it's all right, take advantage of that, because I was trying to determine how to craft my questions. And we will have to take a break at some point here and get a news update for about 3 or 4 minutes. But then, I will want to continue on. So that being said, because I do want to focus about that journey and what how it is that you are helping other, particularly young people that may be lost, make that connection, the same connection you did. But before that, one of the things I'm curious about is because as you know, oftentimes we are familiar with things not going the direction that they did with you. I mean, you spent, I think it was 21 hours. Was the hostage, is that how long it was? The hostage situation? It was an extended period of time. Well, and something, what was going through your mind? What made it end the way that it did without any bloodshed?
Well, there was a lot of things that happened in that office. Again, none of this was premeditated, like, you know, a mapped out situation of going to this location or that location. It was just going in there to create havoc. And by that time, about midway through the ordeal, I had lost a lot of blood because I was smashing out windows, and I wasn't on cocaine or any kind of drugs or anything. It was just pure rage, right? And I was smashing out windows with my arms, and there's chunks of meat hanging off my arm. And so blood was all over the office, but it was all my blood. But the people in the room were on the far side of the room, and they pretty much watched this kid in torment with a weapon in his hand, which now I use. The weapon of my choice now is the Bible. That's the weapon I use now to fight my battles. So at a given point in the middle of the night, what happened the night before, there were those inner voices, if you will, speaking to me, I mean, we all talk to ourselves, or we say, I talked to God today. But when we say we talk to Satan, then we become this crazy guy.
Right.
But it's a reality. Yeah. It's a reality that you can talk to Satan all day long if you open that door. And I highly suggest you don't, because he'd gladly have that conversation with you. But that being said, again, free will, accountability. You can't blame it on Satan or demons or whatever you want to call it, or little angels or devils on your shoulder. You got to focus on your accountability and what you can do to turn your life around before you make that choice. So I was at that point, put the gun in my mouth in front of the hostages, and I was going to take my own life, because these same voices became many voices, and all they wanted me to do was destroy the life in that room. And I was fighting within myself, fighting this urge to do so. And I got down on my knees. I said, I'll kill myself so I don't have to do this. So I put the gun in my mouth, put pressure on the trigger, and a lady fell to her face, and she was crying. And she just put her hands to her face and leaning back and forth. And she screamed, don't do this, don't do this. You're just a kid. You haven't hurt anybody. And as she did this, there was a light reflecting off of something off her neck. And my eyes caught it, peripheral vision caught it through the blurs of the tears. And I jerked over and looked over, and it was a gold cross hanging from her neck. And what happened then was instantaneous. It was just like a piercing. I became in a rage as soon as I saw this cross, because it confronted me. It confronted my sin. And I looked at her, I told her, get out of the room. And instantaneously at that point, a arm, if you will, with a white robe up to the elbow, reached down for me. And obviously no one else in the room saw it, but I saw it. It was the only hope I had. It didn't grab me. It waited for me to reach for it. And I did, and I reached up and touched this. And at that point, my rage was gone instantaneously. My whole frame of thought, my eyes were open. My ears could hear. I became human again. And I could actually sense the pain of the people in the room. I could sense their families' pain of knowing the situation they were in. And they could see my demeanor totally change instantaneously. And all of a sudden, every hour I was letting two people go for ice cream and coffee, and another hour go by, let one person go for pizza. I mean, I was looking for reasons to let them out of that room. And I got down to the last hostage, and it was the morning on Veterans Day, November 11th, 1982. And I got down to the last lady was in the room, and she looked at me and she said, I know what you're doing. And I said, what am I doing? And she said, you're going to go out, suicide by cop. And I said, I looked at her and I didn't answer her. I just said to her, I said, I deserve death for what I've done. You don't. And she said, I'm not leaving unless you come with me. So we argued back and forth for about another 2 hours. And finally I said, let's go, because I was so weak I could barely stand up from all the blood loss. And she reached over and grabbed me, and we walked out into the middle of the hallway together. And as I refer in the book, what happens next is just a whole miracle in itself. There's in the book, you'll see miracle after miracle after miracle. I don't deserve these miracles, but there's something greater that was seeking me in that process, that found me in my darkness and saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. I believe it was Jesus Christ.
We're talking with our author of the week, T.J. Stevens. The book is Once a Shooter, Redemption of a High School Gunman. I'm going to take advantage of your generosity of your time here, and we do have to got traffic that we do, and just a few commercials, and then Don Luzader, our news director, comes in and updates us on news. And then I want to talk about your what has happened since then, and how it is that God has worked in your life since that moment, and what it is that you try to do now when it comes to talking with others, and fill us in and enlighten us on that as we continue on this morning. Springfield's Talk 104.1. I am Nick Reed with our Author of the Week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone. And quick break, then traffic, and as I mentioned, Don Luzader with the latest news. All right, we're going to continue on with our Author of the Week. He's been generous enough to spend a few extra minutes with us. Our Author of the Week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone. His name's T.J. Stevens. His book is Once a Shooter, Redemption of a High School Gunman. First, Don Luzader with the latest news update.
And good morning. A man is in custody this morning after a high-speed chase involving Greene County deputies. This guy was in a stolen vehicle that was spotted at Farm Road 123 and Highway EE. And then when deputies tried to stop this guy, he took off. At one point during that pursuit, that vehicle went through a fence on a dead-end road. Deputies were able to, and they've done this a few times already, deploy Star Chase, which helps them track vehicles using GPS. Officers tracked this vehicle to the 200 block of North Hilton, just off Chestnut Expressway, and took that man into custody. A woman has apologized to the public after video of her shouting KKK belief at a Black Lives Matter protest in Branson went viral. Kathy Jenkins told Color 10 the video does not represent her as a person and that she should not have said such ugly things. In the video, Jenkins holds a Confederate flag and sits in a man's truck while folding it around herself. She says in her apology she did not know the man and was given the flag by someone else. The organizers of the protest say Jenkins knew what she was doing and had been sitting there for a while. And that is the latest news.
KTTS First Alert Forecast, sponsored by Anchor Tactical Supply. Sunny 89 today, 66 for a low tonight. Isolated afternoon showers and storms with a high of 88 tomorrow. And Saturday, a 50% chance of showers, storms, high of 86. It is 69. Our author of the week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone, TJ Stevens, Once a Shooter, Redemption of a High School Gunman. Again, thank you so much for extending your time with us. I want to move on now and post. Well, I guess we should ask, when it all ended on that day, what happened with you? Were you incarcerated? Where were you sent? And then let's talk about your, you know, how God has worked in your life since all of this occurred.
Sure. So when it all ended, I had to go straight to the hospital because they had to sew me up because of the meat hanging from my arms. And then they took me straight to the county jail where I was interrogated. And the SWAT team leader said to me, okay, who was working with you? And I looked at him like, what are you talking about? And he said, you had to know when we had sniper shot on you. We had a green light, shoot to kill on sight, and red light for hold your fire until you have command. And every time you showed your face, we had a shot, we had red light on. And every time we had green light, you were nowhere to be found.
Hmm.
So you had to have communication with somebody,
wow,
somewhere. And instead of responding to the officer at the time, I dropped my head on this metal table. And I'm speaking, I don't know who I'm speaking to other than a higher power of whoever was protecting me. And I said, why? Why did you let me live?
Hmm.
Now I know this is more than just a coincidence. And so anyway, I was facing 144 years in prison. And I asked him at that time, I said, I want the death penalty. I don't want prison. And he said, you can't have the death penalty. You didn't kill anybody. And I said, well, I deserve it for what I've done. You know, it's that self-deprecation mode where you want to hurt yourself because you feel like you're the victim, you know, that kind of crybaby stuff. And so I ended up getting sentenced. I think it was like 23 years, and went to maximum security prison down in Mecklenburg, Virginia. And a year and a half into my sentence, I got on my knees in my bunk, and it was kind of a 23 hours in, 1 hour out in the cage, so you could see the sky kind of thing. And I just vomited my sins into my pillow, screaming in my pillow about 1 o'clock in the morning, and just asking God to forgive me for what I've done to the people and done to so many others and how many family members I hurt and how many, you know, just this vomiting of who I was. And I said, I've shown the world what I can do with my life. Now you take it and show the world what you can do with it. It's yours. I'm done with this life. I'm done with this body. I'm done with this purpose of being alive. And from that moment on, the journey began with him. And I think it was about 6 months later, the warden came to me and said, you believe in God? And I said, yes, I do. He said, well, you must, because you're getting out in 6 months. And we're 2.5 years into my sentence. And of course, I thought he was kind of taunting me. And he said, there's a new program called the Alternative Sentencing Program for youth offenders. And they're looking for somebody who committed a heinous crime but never hurt anybody in the process physically. And they chose you as their test to do this. And so when I was released, it was all hush hush, no press, nobody knew about it. And I went straight and worked for this facility to help children with Down syndrome, and basically taught them guitar. And it was very highly supervised in the process. But I tell you, those 5 years of helping others, especially those kids, they taught me more than I was ever taught in my entire life up to that point. And it gave me purpose, gave me hope, gave me direction. I got involved in a church in the area and started committing my life to Christ. Within 30 days of my release, I was actually chosen to be to play the part of Christ at the U.S. Capitol. And how this happens is more detail in the book, how all these miracles happen. And the world never knew it, but I was on national television for 4 years as Jesus Christ, doing the Passion Play in New York City, Times Square Common, the Boston Common, and, of course, Washington, D.C. And then when the change of hands took place, they stopped it on church property. I mean, on the government property. So,
got it.
So just a lot of things. I mean, there's more detail in the book of the journey and of how God can actually transform
this troubled teen. Yeah, and there's so many questions I want to ask. But this is actually good because it's in the book. So people can go to ABC Books or North Glenstone, get the book. But one of the questions that, and you don't have time to answer it now, and because I want to ask you one or two other quick questions here. But people hear you talk about these miracles, you know, with the sight on you and the shoot order. And then when you weren't there, you know, that was the shooter. And then when they weren't allowed to shoot you, they could get, and then, you know, you talk about all these moments in which were sort of miracles, and people tend to think of miracles happening to everyone else but you, like the quote unquote good guys, not the bad guy. And so why it is that you feel that these miracles were helping to save you. And so that's what people can read in the book. But I do also want you to address why you think we see increased shootings and what drives young people in particular to do this sort of thing.
Hopelessness, total hopelessness in their life. You see, if a child does not have purpose, if they don't have a mentor, to somebody to look up to guide them, to direct them, if they don't have discipline in their life and structure, they will fall. And seeing kids when they do act out, some of them act out in violence, and they act out to try to hurt others, to say, you've hurt me, now I'm going to hurt you. So you have to identify those red flags that a lot of parents think they can talk to their kids, but the kids don't want to talk to their parents. So I say to the parents, get involved in your child's life. Find somebody, an uncle, a youth pastor, a friend who the child associates with as an adult that can mentor this child and get into his head. Because I'm not just talking about shootings. I'm talking about suicide. We've
right,
been 137 kids a day in our country that take their own life. How do they get there? What transformed them to that point? I always call it the bad fruit. Well, when you look in a garden, you see bad fruit. Are you going to blame the fruit? You're going to blame the gardener. We need a new gardener. His name is Jesus Christ.
Not
the world.
You know, throw these two last things at you, and you can answer them in the last minute or two we have with you. One is from, these are actually from listeners. One is a school resource officer, and he was asking if you felt or feel that there was any sort of program or anything that could have been done, you know, to help you that didn't exist, maybe institutionally speaking within the district. And then also, do you have any or have you had any sort of contact or relationship with any of the people that were involved, whether it was SWAT team or the hostages?
Absolutely. So the first question, no, there was not a program, but I have suggested to many people and continue to suggest to many people, number one, prayer back in our schools. Number two, mentorship programs. I'm not talking about guidance counselors. I'm talking about retired military, retired. Is someone of an official level who can mentally deal with troubled kids and go to their house, knock on their door and say, hey, Joe, let's go get a hamburger together. But to have that outlet. And the other thing is in our schools to also have a Bible study. And I keep going back to this because this is where people reveal themselves, right? they dump out, they vent basically to a pastor, to somebody who's willing to listen to these kids. They need an outsource. The other thing is, I have spoken to the SWAT team negotiator, and I've also spoken at police conferences. I've actually gone to the SWAT team training facilities, been able to sit down and speak with them because, see, I want to be part of the solution now.
Yeah.
I was part of the problem back then, but I'm going to take what was meant for evil. God is going to take and use that for good through me. And that's my goal, is to find these kids before they do this action, whether it's in a school or anywhere in the country or in their own bedroom. I want to find these kids and let them know that they are God's masterpiece. They are somebody special beyond what they think they are. When they look in the mirror, what do they see? So, yeah, I've spoken at police conventions, and I wish that we could have more time to talk about that. Yeah. But there's a lot of things in our police that I really admire, and there's a lot of things in our police that need work. I believe we need to put chaplains in our schools as well as in the police departments, as well as the inner cities. Constantly, we need to put God back in America.
Our author of the week, TJ Stevens, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone, wants to shoot a redemption of a high school gunman. Thank you, one, for the book, for being with us this morning, and for allowing us a little bit of extra time from you this morning. Thank you so very much.
Hey, thank you so much, Nick. God bless you. Take care, sir.
And God bless you. Have a good rest of your day. Author of the week, ABC Books, North Glenstone. Again, thank you to TJ Stevens, Once a Shooter, Redemption of a High School Gunman. I'm Nick Reed. This is Springfield's Talk 104.1.